Rebecca, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I let my hair down for this one. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is headed to you. The Maryland Lottery sponsoring it. Let yourself play. We are going to be at Silver Spring Mining in Perry Hall, where Don Moeller was once the assistant superintendent to the special. And then he was the Baltimore County executive, of course, of Perry Hall and Dundalk and all those places. Don, how are you? We're taking the crab cake tour on the road. You thought I ate too many in August. Wait till I get down to the chop tank in Fells Point next week. Wait till we get with the mayor at Coco's. We're going back to Fadley's on the 10th of November and getting the delicious by the way, Fadley's featured on the Today Show this week.
Mr. Al Roker. Well, you know, what a fitting who else? Where, if you want to talk crab cakes in the United States, right, you start with Fadley's. So,
Danny, did you know about the Blackjacks? Did you
Bill see and Nancy? Say that again.
Did you see the piece, the actual piece?
I've got it recorded. I was in New York the day it ran.
So here's the wild part, right? Like, Al Roker shows up, and it was about 3 weeks ago. It was when the football game was here and the Monday night football and all, or Sunday night football. So I met the production crew. I was there actually having a crab cake that day and some mac and cheese, and like we're going to be having on the 10th. And so they taped it all. And I thought, well, this is cool. Al ate a crab cake there 28 years ago and has a picture with Bill and Nancy, you know, from 3 decades ago. And he came back, but this piece was about the Waterman. About black watermen. They were called Black Jacks, which I've never heard of that phrase until I saw this on the Today Show the other day. So it's a little educational piece about the history of black watermen, especially on the Eastern Shore and in Baltimore, and bringing in crabs. So there was a whole angle to it where it was educational. Social studies, like we do around here, right?
There you go. Well, speaking of social studies, Nestor, I'm telling you now, it's beyond anecdotal. We can take it to the bank when we schedule a recon. And again, as folks know, we don't green room the topics. You know, you come up with topics. I come up with topics. And inevitably, as we go to sit down and record, there's breaking news. So today we have two bits of breaking news before we get to some of the things that both you and I wanted to chat about in the next 30 minutes. One is, and boy, did I have some! Did I have a throwback moment when I come out of the folks that follow me on social media know that Linda and I made our first foray back to New York City to see a Broadway show since the pandemic. Spectacular, spectacular! And a quick aside before we get to the breaking news: my goodness, you talk about planning and organization. I was really dreading how long it might take us to get into the theater. We went to see Tina, which is just an incredible show. The finale by itself is worth the price of the ticket. But I thought, man, this is going to be a hassle. We're going to have to show our vaccination cards along with our tickets, and people are going to be backed up. Well, boy, did they put Broadway put some thought into this. They had a number of young men and women working the line, and they looked at your vax cards right there, and as you presented them, as a matter of fact, I still have mine on. I haven't cut it off yet. I've got to cut it off.
Don, this isn't any different than going to Meriwether or anywhere else around
right,
here.
Right, but the point was there was no delay in getting into the theater. Nobody bitching and moaning about wearing a mask. Everybody had masks on throughout the show. So the new normal worked in New York. Congratulations, New York. Congratulations, Broadway. We went to two different restaurants. Again, same deal. Show your vax stuff. Go in masked up. It all worked. If that's a new normal, I think we can live with that. So anyway, I come out of the theater and I had my phone off. I turned my phone back on and I got all these messages and saying, oh man, you must be having a flashback to when you were part of the team that had to vet lieutenant governor candidates for Kevin Kamenetz over 4 years ago. And I thought, well, what's this all about? And then I get a few more messages, and it turns out it's every campaign's nightmare that Comptroller Francho had announced his pick for lieutenant governor, a Prince George's County councilwoman, Monique Anderson Walker. And then within hours, and you hope the rollout's going to be seamless. And again, I can, you know, roll the curtain back a little bit for folks. I mean, I was in the room for county executive candidates. You have basically have a big whiteboard and you're putting up names of people who you think might be on a short list for lieutenant governor. And you're being very brutal in terms of going through pros and cons and who will be the best match for the personality for your candidate and what strengths do they have and how do they bring some skills that perhaps will help.
By the way, I hate all that. If well, I'm white, important. She has to be black. And if I'm male, she has to be a woman.
Well,
and if we're from the
that.
East Nestor, side, they have to be from the West side. And like, Nestor, that's the whole Kamala Joe thing. And that's the whole Don
that.
Mike thing. And like, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we may.
It's electability.
May not,
it's just. It's,
we may not get too much more today. If you want to go next, because I love the fact that you just said that you hate that because I was
well,
really
that's what
thinking.
It has to be.
Well,
that's,
let's talk about it. Wait a minute. Let's
you think you're going to get elected. You would right. never not think that way. You have
well,
to think
let's,
that way.
Let's unpack it for a minute. And so we're not doing inside baseball here for folks who may not have listened. Within hours of the announcement, a story broke that Councilwoman Anderson Walker and her husband had some rather serious tax lien issues. And as we go to record this, the reporting is still taking place. And again, I tell folks, I'm like everyone else here. You and I are just reading what's coming out. But, you know, evidently the tax lien issues were fairly serious. So all of a sudden, your rollout and what you hope is going to be a very positive story about diversity, although they didn't have regional diversity, and we'll talk about that, is now blown up. And one of the things my brother always says, one of the rules in politics is that if you're explaining, you're losing. And all of a sudden, as opposed to extolling the virtues of your candidate, you now are back on your heels and you're having to explain financial issues that I think, Nestor, and I'm going to get into your question about the vetting because, boy, I did revisit it in my mind and I called Kevin Loeb. Who was senior advisor to the county executive at that time. And he was one of the key players in that process. And we were chatting about back and forth on text about our memories of what it was like. The reality is that you're now thrown off your game. And I was trying to imagine, and people know my friend, Kevin Kamenetz, God bless him. Kevin and I were just shaking our heads. Can you imagine had we missed this 4 or 5 years ago, we both joked that we would have to have headed for Siberia, never to come back, that Kevin would have been so angry. So it's going to be interesting to watch how this plays out. It's certainly not the rollout that the Francho campaign wanted. Can he recover?
Well, he
short.
Thinks he's going to win, right? I mean, is Malia Cronin going to come on next week and say he's gotten more votes than anybody in the state and therefore he's going to win? I mean, I've met him. You know what I mean?
Well,
like, I mean, and we're going to meet a whole bunch of other candidates.
Yeah, we're going to, you know, we're talking with a bunch of the candidates. And certainly in the early polls, I've written about this. One of the concerns for the Francho campaign is because of name recognition, they are currently. They have a slight lead in the polls, but they haven't been able to grow that lead. This, when you announce your lieutenant governor, you hope to pick up momentum that builds on that lead. And this
well, you also
is
hope to be the headlines to be that you're running and it's awesome, not like,
correct.
Hey, you
correct.
Picked someone with tax leads.
Correct. Now,
right, yes.
I want to go back to your point because I think it's relevant not only on a local level, but on a national level as well, Nestor, and that is how you try to what we'll call "quote unquote" balance tickets. So I'll go back very honestly, and we'll talk. I'll talk about the Kamenetz campaign. So
well, he was a white male; he couldn't pick another one.
We had a white Jewish male from the Baltimore region. So when you start talking, and people can like or not like it, just giving them a peek behind the curtain, you begin to talk about what do we need to do to balance the ticket. Now, one of the questions that we started with, and I'm assuming
let's start with this, females only. Let's start
well,
with that.
Well, that's where I was going to go. Not everybody agrees with that, Nestor. And let's talk about that. Because
well, I don't know. Martin O'Malley, you know, balanced his ticket. And then the second time around, nobody wanted to vote for him. Right. So
I'm talking about thinking that
would matter as to whether they vote for you or not. I have never voted for a gubernatorial candidate based on who their running mate might be.
Well, that's okay. Like, that's point just, one. Other than the initial press release, the bulk of the electorate will never be able to name the lieutenant governor candidate.
I mean, you could have Kamala Harris's name in 6 months. I don't even know what she does. She's disappeared in the same way that Mike Pence disappeared. Yeah.
You could have a major misstep like Kathleen Kennedy Townsend did when she picked, I guess it was the admiral, and the admiral had some really embarrassing moments in a debate. That can hurt you. But for the most part, you're absolutely right. And I'm sure that this is where the Franchot campaign is now. Look, this isn't lethal. It doesn't drive a nail in the Franchot campaign in any way, but it's not the rollout that they wanted. But let's go back to balancing tickets, because the other thing that was written, the tax issues aside, was that so far all of the campaigns that have announced so far have been D.C. centric or D.C. suburb centric. And it was interesting to me that in the rollout, prior to the tax information coming out, the comptroller was having to answer some questions as to whether or not he was worried about snubbing his nose at Baltimore. And he had to say, you know, and then he had to answer. And it goes back to my brother's point again, if you're explaining, you're losing. So you do talk about whether it has to be male or not. Now, this is an interesting time, Nestor, in Maryland politics, because for the first time in decades, all of the major constitutional offices in Maryland are going to be new. In other words, we're going to have a new governor, Brian Frosch, and we're going to have Brian on soon. I just spoke to Brian, who's been just an outstanding attorney general, has decided that it's time for him to retire. And
apparently, Martin O'Malley's better half has decided maybe it's time for her to try for that job.
Katie O'Malley and Congressman Brown could be a really fun race to watch. We've got the comptroller's office where Mr. Franchot's stepping aside. We're going to have a spirited race there. And the appointed Secretary of State, Nancy Kopp, has announced that she's going to step aside. So we're going to have all four of these major offices have new players. And that's really a major shift in Maryland politics. But going back to ticket balancing, I will tell you that not everyone in the room, when we vetted candidates for Kevin, was convinced that it couldn't be a male. Now, I will tell you, in full disclosure, that I think Kevin Loeb was with, I have to think back, I think Kevin agreed with me. I was in the camp that in this day and age, with more than half of the electorate being female, and the fact that it at that time it was 2018, but the fact today is it's going to be 2022. I think if you have a male candidate at the head of the ticket, you need to have a female on the ticket. Not everyone agrees. And I would flip that to the point where, let's go presidential candidates. I think we haven't come this far yet, and I think hopefully someday soon we will. But let's hypothetically say we had a female candidate. Well, let's go back to Hillary. You know, no one thought Hillary could pick a female to be her vice presidential candidate, even if there was an outstanding female. Well, to me, that's silly. We've had several hundred years of all men on the ticket, right? But we're not so advanced where we think we could have
two females. Don, what do you think of what people are going to vote for? I mean, let's be honest. There were large, large swaths of people in this country who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she was a woman. And that's why she lost. And she did a lousy job of campaigning. She did a lousy – her running mate, most people don't even remember Tim Kaine. And not that people remember running mates, but nobody was voting for her based on that or against her based on that. Tim Kaine didn't matter. She didn't pick a running mate that mattered.
Right. Now, again – I would suggest if you go back a little further, you know, there's that moment where John McCain is reportedly sitting down by the little brook or lake on his property, and this pretty young governor from Alaska comes in, and she bats her eyes, and she's going to be her own kind of maverick, you know, and he gets smitten, and they pick Sarah Palin. And I would suggest that that was a pick that backfired. They can backfire. You know,
yeah, what happened? Don't get down on Francho. He didn't pick Sarah Palin yet, you know.
No, he didn't pick Sarah Palin. Well, that's the problem, is the picks can backfire. So you have on the whiteboard, you do talk about regional diversity, racial diversity, sexual diversity, all those things. And then you try to come up with the best choice. I think, and this is inside baseball, I think the part so far of that might be a bit problematic for the Francho campaign, and this is the kind of thing, Nestor, over the years that has driven you crazy, particularly on the sports side. Let's focus. I know it's driven you crazy. And I think for some folks yesterday, it just didn't ring quite true. When the tax story came out, the Francho team immediately put out a press release. They didn't take any questions, which I know members of the press, and I've talked to them, thought that was quite odd. And quite, you're going to have this major story.
Dude, the dude did the video with us. He's the only human to ever come on the show and not turn his camera on.
Yeah, well, that was
true. He's an effing politician. So if you want me to talk about respect for Peter Francho, none given and none expected, to be honest.
Let's try to be fair here.
I am fair. He's a politician who didn't turn his camera on my show. That's a video show. And he's green. And he showed up green. And I don't know what else to do about that,
but it doesn't make
a ringing endorsement to invite you back on my show.
I want to stay present tense in that yesterday, the staff, and it's been reported since in a number of media outlets, indicated that we were well aware of the tax issues and were not worried about them. Now, everyone who's reached out to me says, Don, they may be able, and certainly the councilwoman may be able to survive this.
That's my favorite kind of politician, right?
But anyone to suggest that they knew about it and said, yeah, it's not a problem.
I meant
it won't be a big deal. Nobody's buying that part of the argument. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out. The other thing that's happening this morning, and we won't know for a few days, And I know people are exhausted. Man, Nestor, we talk about COVID fatigue and electoral fatigue, and we've got big elections coming up in Virginia and New Jersey, which is a little closer than people thought it would be. The one in Virginia is razor thin. You have, you know, Joe Biden having won Virginia by 10 points. It appears that that Democrats are really fatigued and may not be turning out, and the Trump wannabe down there, Glenn Youngkin, may actually eke out a victory. Next week when we come on and do the recon, we will know that. But people are tired. And yet in the midst of this, we wake up today as we get ready to do the recon, and I saw the pictures of the motorcade and the president ready to head over to Capitol Hill. It appears they have a framework on the Build Back Better Act, which will then allow them to also pass infrastructure. The belief on Democratic insiders is that if Biden is actually able to get both of these bills to the finish line, you will then start to see some real movement in terms of his approval numbers. Again, we talked about last week, Nestor. Democrats made a real communication error early on in this process, and they got
the Biden spending bill.
Well, that's it.
Like, let's start with that. It's not an investment. Right. It's a spending bill.
They got hoodwinked into the old narrative, the spend happy Democrats, right? The tax and spend Democrats, as opposed to, and you and I have chatted about it before, you know, if you look at what's in the bill, and I think to me, the one thing I'm really looking to see if it remains in the bill, because if it doesn't, I will be disappointed, and that is paid family leave. Now, evidently, Joe Manchin is not a fan of paid family leave. I would tell you that it's one of the things that Americans across the board No, they would benefit.
Well, every other civilized country in the world has it.
Is able to provide.
We don't have enough people here where we have 10% passport in this country. So people don't understand that, like, that's not an American thing. It's an anti-American thing, really.
It's very strange that we think we can't provide that. The other one that is a head scratcher, and boy, have we seen Big Pharma rear its head in the past 2 to 3 weeks as they run these insane commercials about how if you allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices, you won't be able to get the medicine that you want. No, that's not true. It just means that with its purchasing power, Medicare would save consumers and the government across the board millions and millions and millions of dollars.
We get into at the heart of all of this, what's good for business making money and executives making money or billionaires making money and what's good for all of us.
It's really, really difficult. And again, the power of K Street down in DC. And I think it's what makes people just throw their hands up. I have so many friends, Nestor, some of them mutual friends of yours and mine, who just really talk about the fatigue they see in their families. And I said, I think it's related to COVID. I think it's related to a slower than we would like economic recovery. I mean, people are now making plans to go out and make sure their Christmas shopping is done before Thanksgiving because they're afraid of the supply chain issues. I mean, when you go into stores, you now are seeing empty shelves. We've got hundreds of tankers sitting in the LA Harbor. Right? People are just tired. They're very, very tired. And that's not good for incumbents. I think we're going to have Malia Cromer and Damian O'Doherty on next week talking about the Goucher poll. I think that fatigue is reflected in her poll. I can't wait to talk to her about that. But in the midst of what's always not great news, you were flat on your back, and I know you were so disappointed in not being able to attend the memorial for our good friend Ted Venatulwas. Nestor, it was... what a week for Ted. And I want to talk about it in the most part. When I say that, in that his family, his wife Lynn and boys and daughter Teddy, they allowed family and friends to come together to celebrate this incredible, incredible man. And celebrate it was. And it was just, they did something. It was interesting, Nestor, because I thought in the memorial, they really thought it through. They had his son talking about growing up and who Ted was as a young dad and the importance of family and how the grandparents came to America. You know, then they had Stuart Bainum, and we'll talk about the Baltimore Banner. Stuart, who's worked so hard to save the sun, and then when he was unable to, has turned his attention to the new digital media, what we believe is
going
to be a
powerhouse. Which, by the way, I've always thought it's a much better idea. So, you and I have gone through this at the beginning that I've always felt like the Baltimore Sun is a damaged brand, like the Baltimore Colts. I always thought Star Sharon, and that was always my thought.
And Stuart Bainum has not failed at much in his career. I don't expect him to fail at this. So I think for those of us who love journalism and know how important the free press is, Stuart talked about the important role that Ted played in that. And then our friend, former mayor and former governor, Martin O'Malley, the title part of his remembrance of Ted was a Baltimore guy. And he talked about Ted being at his core a Baltimore guy. I've heard Governor O'Malley speak many, many, many times.
We had Ted on and asked Ted why he moved out. Ted lived next door to me.
Right.
So,
right down,
you know,
right below you.
all of my last 6 months of his life, our correspondences have been of me taking a sunrise picture like this and him waking up saying, I missed it, but you took a picture for me. And then he would take a good one some mornings that I missed and said, I got a good one this morning. You slept through it. And that was kind of the fun part of our relationship is that he was not just a Baltimore guy. He insisted on living in downtown Baltimore at the end of his life.
He loved his city and he loved the region. And Governor O'Malley truly captured that. And then the speaker. And when the speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, comes to your memorial and gets up. And you know, I said to Linda, I said, it was amazing. She wasn't the speaker of the House when she was up there in Crash Hour Auditorium talking about our friend Ted Venatoulis. She was a childhood and high school friend of the Venatoulis family. It was her brother who, you know, was mayor, and Ted as county executive. We're so, so close, and we're doing things that had never been done in terms of regional cooperation. You know, it's Uncle Ted and Uncle Tommy. And, you know, the speaker told the story that, you know, on Tommy's birthday this year, she got a voicemail from Ted just saying, you know, how much I miss Tommy. And boy, Nancy, I miss Tommy so much. She said, little did I know that he missed him so much that he was going to choose to leave us all behind and go be with Tommy a little earlier than we would like. But just so, so moving. She was special. And then doing what family members find so difficult, Lynn Venatoulis was getting up and talking about Ted, you know, her husband, the man she knew as a dad, the man who, and I think if I describe what Lynn captured in Ted, was joyful. And I've never seen anyone else do this, Nestor. It may have been done, but they did. She brought Ted and allowed Ted to be part of the memorial. She had a video. She talked about, and you know it well, Ted's infectious laugh and giggle. And she said he never laughed or giggled more than when it had something to do with his daughter, Teddy. And she caught him one night giggling at something Teddy had said. And he just couldn't stop laughing at dinner. And she had it on video. And they showed it on the huge screen at Crash Hour. It was as if Ted Venatoulis was with us saying, this is going to be okay. You guys are I'm okay. And you guys are going to be okay. And then she closed with, and Pam Wood captured it in her story. She said, you know, Ted loved music and he had a nephew come up from New Orleans and play some of his favorite songs from the Great American Songbook. And she said that was his preference, you know, Sinatra and light jazz and the Great American Songbook. She said, with one exception, she said, inexplicably, Ted loved, and the name of the song's not Sunshine in Your Pocket, but the Justin Timberlake song that everybody calls Sunshine in Your Pocket. And she said she would occasionally be in the other room and she would hear Sunshine in Your Pocket coming from the other room. She walked in one day with her phone, and Ted was just gleefully shaking his head to his iPad and Sunshine in Your Pocket, which really captures Ted, doesn't it? And she says to him, Ted, what are you doing? And he just sort of giggled in that Venatoulis giggle again and said, it's Sunshine in Your Pocket. At which point they throw the Timberlake video on the screen at Goucher, and the whole audience just stands up and claps and dances and sends Ted off to Sunshine in Your Pocket. So what a fitting tribute to our friend Ted Venatoulis.
I know next week we're going to have Damien O'Doherty on. We're going to be talking about the Baltimore Banner. So I'll save that conversation for next week and my thoughts on that and a future newspaper and the current newspaper and my newspaper background and the Baltimore Examiner and the News Post.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to that, Nestor. We got a lot to talk about next week. I'm going to do a little social, pop culture stuff next week too, because I've been watching a few things that I think are fairly meaningful. Hey, and I'll leave you with this. And a friend of Linda's asked her this year, you know, as I told you, we headed to Broadway and you know how much I love movies. And a friend of Linda said, you guys were willing to sit in a packed Broadway theater, but you haven't gone back to the movies. And Linda said this to me at dinner. And she said, how come you haven't gone back to the movies? And Linda and I looked at each other and said, it's a great question. It may be time. So we may be ready to dip our toe back into the water, get ready to go back to the movie theater. A lot of good things coming out. And
I don't go to movies. You know that. I know. By the way, if you know the Obama Springsteen sessions.
Oh.
I think I'm going to do that one soon. There has been a part of me, The Wire keeps coming to me, that I need to sit and watch The Wire. I mean, dude, I was flat on my ass for the better part of a week and a half. First week without my wife. My wife came home. I had a surgical procedure. It's been awful. Better the last couple of days as we get up on Halloween. But if I were ever going to like watch Ted Lasso or get a Hulu subscription or figure out what Netflix actually is or watch the Dave Chappelle thing that everybody's screaming about, or I don't, you know, any of these things, there's a lot of things that I could dive into. I haven't dived into any of them.
You're a busy man, but let me prioritize.
In the winter, I think I may take a TV show or two, but I think the Obama Springsteen thing is first for me, I think.
Well, you spend on, let me tell you how to do Obama Springsteen. You spend a fair amount of time in airports and on airplanes. They're spectacular, Nestor.
And how long is it all?
Oh, geez. I want to say
10 hours,
maybe 8 to 10.
But it's long. This isn't an hour.
Oh, yeah, it's a number. It's not one session. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a number of sessions. They are spectacular. They
done it all. You did the whole thing?
I've listened to it all. Yeah.
Oh, and I didn't know. Okay.
Well, I knocked it out. I listened to a bunch of them while walking. You know, my ritual is I try to walk an hour a day for better or worse. And that's when I listen to all the different podcasts, or try to. I can't get through all the podcasts I'd like to listen to. So I listened to a bunch of Bruce and the president on those walks. I probably had 5 or 6 hours left. And one day, back, it had to be in the spring. Oh, I know. It was when I went to pick my granddaughter up from college. I was trying to think when it was. I went to pick her up, and it was a 6 hour or so ride.
Binged it.
And
okay.
I went right through it, and it made the ride go so mesmerizing. Yeah, then I would prioritize
that. Southern Virginia with Barack Obama and Bruce Springsteen in the car.
You may not. It will be interesting when you watch The Wire. I will tell you, I love it. I think it's one of the greatest series ever.
You've only watched it once?
Yes. And okay. I could watch it again. Linda would never watch it. I can tell you that our good friend Martin O'Malley hated it. There are a number of my friends who don't like the depiction of Baltimore, and I understand that. But it's amazing TV with amazing characters. So,
well, there was a great piece that came out on the BBC this week about it. It was a great piece on the BBC that came out about 200 and some critics around the world. They called it the greatest television show ever. And you know, David lives four blocks away from me. I've never had him on.
And he's involved in the new project. We need to get he and
I would
Justin.
Love to have David Simon come out and hang out.
That
would be right there with John Waters as far as like the kind of people I'd like to have on.
Yeah,
the show.
We'll get David and Justin back on and talk about the new series. You know, We Own This City, which we did an incredible. And I would ask people to go to the video vault, the audio vault rather, and pull up our series with Justin Fenton about his book, We Own This City. Just spectacular. And if you haven't bought the book, buy it. Nestor, I'll leave it with this with you. I will be fascinated when you start to watch The Wire as to whether or not you stick with it, or if 30 minutes in you go, dude, I can't do it. And I've got to tell you, I know you pretty well. I've known you almost 40 years now, right? I'm not sure where I think you'll fall on it. So I'm really intrigued. I'm not sure where you're going
to
fall.
I'm not really interested in it. It's coming to me, and I'm just talking about it. It's 2 decades old. I'd have to get the DVR. I mean, DVDs. DVDs the only way you can watch it. You can't stream it because they didn't have music licensing. So there's nowhere to click and watch it.
You have HBO. I think you can. It was on HBO, right? I think you can watch it on it. I think if you go to
archive it. Okay.
I think it's there. I'm pretty sure it's there. Okay. I think you can watch it on YouTube. I think if you just go say The
because
Wire.
I'm an HBO subscriber, I can watch it. Okay.
Oh, I think it'll come up. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, a lot going on, a lot happening in the Maryland gubernatorial race. As we said, we're going to be talking Goucher poll. We got to see what's happening in Congress. We got the Baltimore banner. So a lot going on in the recon. And we just tell folks to have stay tuned as we head deeper into fall. Hey, really, real quick before we go. You buying or selling, as they say, the Ravens going forward? They got all kinds of issues. Where do you see we get middle of December? Where are the Ravens?
I'm buying them beating Minnesota, Miami, and Chicago. I'm not necessarily buying that when they get in with Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati, that it's not a split in some way. They've already lost to Cincinnati. So
Hey, Nestor, when you and Luke talk, it's a brave new world. Does 10 get you into the playoffs in a 17-game season?
I don't know. Probably depends on how the rest of the competition is, right? Yeah. I mean,
I don't know either.
I would think we haven't even talked. Crowded.
Isn't it a sad commentary? What a sad commentary that we're doing a recon in the middle of the World Series and we haven't talked World Series. You put something up. We'll get out of here.
Nobody's
before we do,
I
want you to talk about that thing that you put up, you posted on social about how many people were watching years ago versus today. That was a fascinating.
Well, how many
post
people in the
up?
Country, the percentage wise, that's why. They right. were, 40 years ago, there were 100 million less people in the country and 30 million more watching this World Series. So, like,
that was fascinating.
The fact that, they've really atrophied, and it's very obvious. I mean, I've had it on the last couple of nights. I've fallen asleep on it. I don't care about the people. I don't care about the characters. I think the Astros are scum. I like Dusty Baker fine. The game doesn't move. Watching guys, everybody plays right field or everybody plays left field. The games take 4 hours. It's dreadful. I mean, I'm really no longer a baseball fan. I can't even stay with it. It's just
Nestor,
not interesting to me.
I think
I'd rather watch The Wire.
This is a topic that we'll come back and revisit because you know I love baseball, but
Did you watch last night all night?
Remember I was out of town.
Okay.
So I watch bits and pieces. I don't watch the entire thing. And I do, even though purists poo-poo it, I do think the pace of play is an issue. And in that playoff game,
all of it's an issue.
Between the Dodgers and the Giants, when the Dodgers bought their closer in the second inning, I said, whoa, baby, we're not in Kansas anymore. The game is a bit unrecognizable from what we grew up with.
And everything's about betting on it, too.
Oh, you know, with that, we're out of here because
I have no problem with betting, gambling. I'm sponsored by the Maryland Lottery, but betting on baseball, how about just get me interested in it first? I've been interested my whole life, and it hasn't been because of gambling, and that's probably not going to change tomorrow morning, really. And especially when you used to gamble on starting pitchers, and now they've completely changed the strategy. It's not the same game. My father wouldn't recognize it.
No, it's not the same game. And the fact that starting pitchers for the most part are pretty irrelevant anymore,
it because they don't want to pay them.
Really, really amazing. Lots to talk about.
Don Moeller, it is the Recon. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. The Crab Cake Tour is back on it. We're going to be in Fells Point next Friday at Chop Tank. We're going to be with the mayor on the 17th at Coco's. We're going to be at Fadley's with a lot of new friends on the 10th. Check the schedule at BaltimorePositive.com. You can always email me, Ness@BaltimorePositive.com, as well as Luke, who's out in Owings Mills waiting for them to get back going and taking on the Vikings later on in the week. It's all brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. And I've been craving some Royal Farms chicken, so I got to be making that happen. I'm Nestor. Oof. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking with the county executive about Baltimore Positive stuff.